I think you probably want to go ahead and interview Ralph. So, Ralph, are you prepared? It's Ralph Nader again. And some of the union folks, by the way, are in the room and very much willing to talk to the press. And so please feel free to interview any of the different local union leaders. Thank you.
Thank you very much. In addition to what I said earlier, I'd like to make the point on the World Trade Organization and NAFTA. Unlike the other candidates, I've read the multiple hundred pages of these agreements and long ago concluded that they undermined our democratic process and subverted to the supremacy of international commerce the health and safety standards and the ones that will be proposed in the workplace environment marketplace. As a signatory to these trade agreements, the United States should give a 6-month notice of withdrawal and renegotiate the trade agreements with other countries to lift standards up from abroad rather than to pull our standards down in the environment, labor, and consumer arenas. The other two parties simply want more of the WTO and more of the NAFTA without taking into account how they even shut out the press from the tribunals in Geneva, the courts in Geneva, which are closed to the press without any public transcript, as well as to the harmonization of health and safety standards downward committees that are also closed to the press. I don't think many reporters realize that there is no Freedom of Information Act when it comes to NAFTA or WTO. So without any further ado, and if you want me to answer what was in the Chronicle, whatever you want to ask, just come on. Let me just say, excuse me, one other thing, that I'm sensing a trend among union locals around the country that they're going to increasingly go their independent way and support our candidates. Part of that is because the international union chiefs are not very enthralled by Al Gore, although they feel obligated by tradition to support the Democratic nominee. Part of it is due to the increasing concern of locals that the issues that are closest to them, whether it's repeal of Taft-Hartley, whether it's occupational health and safety, whether it's outsourcing and corporatization, are being ignored by the Democratic Party, which is giving them a pile of rhetoric and turning their back on organized labor because the Democratic Party leaders believe that organized labor has nowhere to go. Well, they have a place to go. It's the Green Party, Nader, Ledoux candidacy. Okay? Yes?
Yeah. I was in the meeting upstairs, and I was in there accidentally. I felt like an infiltrator. But I did notice something. It seemed like a microcosm of a larger problem of a representative democracy, which was that even here in Oakland, which is largely communities of color, there are very few organizers of color in there. How would you address this kind of issue where we don't have the majority being represented well in economic and educational opportunity?
It's very simple. The millions of low-paid workers are heavily people of color, and they're not unionized. And if they're unionized, they will run the unions, and they will have a bigger impact on the AFL-CIO and national labor movement. When the National Farm Workers was unionized, you know who ran those union meetings. And that's what union democracy is all about. But we have 47 million people in this country not making a living wage. 10 million of them, by the way, at the minimum wage, 75% of whom are adults, not teenagers. And they're not unionized. Walmart, Kmart, McDonald's, and all the other profit-glutted multinational corporations that are squeezing the livelihoods out of people who work hard every day and their premises. Now, let's just make one thing very clear, as someone once said. If the minimum wage in 1968 was inflation-adjusted at the federal level, federal minimum wage, it would be $7.30. The federal minimum wage now is $5.15. With 20 years of economic growth, people should be getting double, more than double what the minimum wage is. Instead, they're slipping behind.
Mr. Nader, could you address the criticism of Patricia Ireland? You said that you are, quote, ill-informed on the issue of abortion rights and haven't represented women in
Well, this is what the politics of fear does to constituency groups like now that support the Democratic nominee. Pat Ireland is a very good person. Now is a very good person, a very good group. So good that we've adopted their entire position. It is on our website. You can't do better than that. When I read it, I said, why do I have to write my 7 pages? It's right here. And second, that I've been fighting for women's rights before Patricia Ireland knew the term, if I may evoke a little seniority on her. And one of the areas that we have pioneered in is marketplace discrimination against women, which we have documented in 2 books, one in the 80s and one in the 90s, and gone on the Phil Donahue show with them. Women are discriminated against in everything from excessive and unnecessary operations, unnecessary prescriptions, auto dealer and repair firms ripping them off because they think they can take advantage of women, credit discrimination, and many other forms that are documented in our book. And I must say that I have failed utterly to get now interested in this subject for the last 18 years. And the other thing I'd like Patricia Ireland to pay some attention to is over 40,000 women a year die from medical malpractice in hospitals. No comment there. I haven't heard now talk about why the Clinton-Gore administration is foot-dragging on RU-486 for almost 8 years. And I think it's time for the constituency groups for the Democrat Party to hold that party up to a higher standard instead of crawl on their knees to an endorsement because they believe the Republicans are worse. That's not a good enough choice for the women of America, the choice between a bad Democratic Party and a worse Republican Party. The choice should include a Green Party that means what it says and says what it means.
I'm confused because you put Mao's position on your website and then you just went on about some of your disagreements, how they don't go far enough. So what are you saying? You agree or you don't agree?
No, I agree with all their positions, but I'm trying to push them further. The RU-486 is something that Clinton and Gore have sat on with the FDA. And just coincidentally, they don't say much about marketplace discrimination against women, which results in death, injury, and economic fraud that the women's organizations simply have not paid enough attention to. They pay attention to equal pay for equal work. And by the way, they haven't asked Mr. Gore to speak out on ERA. Isn't that strange? Wasn't that a big crusade? Why is the Democratic Party now so silent on ERA? Who are they afraid of? Phyllis Schlafly? No? Jerry Falwell? Let me tell you, if Patricia Ireland wants to debate this, I'd be very happy to debate it with her. But I think she is hiding the better instincts of that organization because they're afraid of the Republicans more then they're disgusted with the Democrats.
Can I just respond to that, please? You know, we're an organization of women. 31,000 registered nurses we represent. And we're appalled by these statements in the press today. I mean, if health care isn't a woman's issue, what is? And this man has the best position on health care by far. All of the issues. And so, I mean, I just want to go on record as saying we're appalled.
You know, I mean, sometimes when an argument is so easy, you want to make sure you don't emphasize it too much. But just to remind some of you, in 1957, there were 11 states in this country who prohibited women from serving on juries, civil juries. And you know who wrote that article? You're looking at him. So, you know, I don't like political expediency by now or any other groups that are affiliated with the Democratic Party. I'm the only candidate among 4 who comes out for full equal rights and equal responsibilities for gay and lesbian Americans. You don't see Al Gore do that. He's waffling on the military, waffling on civil unions, and yet the constituency groups in the area, with few exceptions around the country, are supporting him. They're supporting a man who doesn't stand for their most fundamental position in their area of civil rights. That's why I want to get on the debate, you see.
That's why they don't want you on the debate.
They
want to get there and blow up in the smoke like they have in the last 4 years.
That's a riposte. Any other?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I'd like to get your position on military spending and the stockpile stewardship program, which is being used to maintain and modernize our nuclear weapons stockpile.
Well, first of all, there's no longer any Soviet Union. The military budget is excessively bloated. The money that should be saved by reduced military spending can go into a conversion economic strategy to expand public transit, manufacturing, and use, to expand environmental cleanup, and to expand the technological horizons of solar energy. I want workers in this country to work on life fostering and life sustaining activities, not on producing the latest death-dealing weapons that are not needed and even rejected by many Pentagon analysts as a waste of money and strategically not needed. Any other questions?
Could you give us your reaction to the judge's decision against MasterCard with regard to the commercial? And do you have any subliminal
You know, for MasterCard to sue me, an arch critic of the credit companies, is really reckless. And I called up the CEO of MasterCard the day the company sued me, Mr. Sealander, and said, are you sure you want to go ahead with it? Because it's like, who was it that said, make my day? and they accused me of infringing their trademark on the word priceless. Now, can you imagine? They have put a price on priceless and commercialized that part of the dictionary. But that wasn't the worst of it. The worst of it was in their legal complaint, which I sent to Saturday Night Live. They said that I was enhancing my political campaign by taking advantage of the popular goodwill and reputation of MasterCard.
Give them credit. So
we met in court this week, and the judge denied the temporary restraining order that MasterCard wanted to put on our use of the ad. On the other hand, they said that if we intended to use the ad, we had to give MasterCard 24 hours notice. I mean, basically, the budget for the ad and so on has already passed, but it's still being used. Jay Leno used it, at least 2/3 of it.
What was your reaction to the rats ad? Can we have your comments on that?
It's Shakespeare's reaction. Much ado about nothing. Let's talk about the real grave issues confronting this country. George W. Bush's presidential run may be unconstitutional. You know about that?
I don't know.
Because he's really running for president as a giant corporation disguised as a person. Any other questions?
Right, last thing for me. What about Wenho Lee? What's your reaction to this whole situation?
You know, I could see that coming, that he was being railroaded, he was a scapegoat, and the government tried to cover its flank at the Department of Energy and say, we've caught the person. You know, don't blame us in Washington. And fortunately, we have a good judiciary on that case and a very incisive judge, and he did the right thing. And that's what the courts are for. When you have arbitrary and capricious action by other branches of government, the courts are there to uphold the rule of law. He may well have a civil lawsuit against the government on that.
Let's hope so.
In your meeting today with the labor unions, what was your argument for why they should support you?
There was no argument. I fielded an effervescence. Each one as articulate as the other, with one reason or the other. If this thing begins sweeping through the country, the union local level, we're going to see a real political revolution here. Because listen, when it comes down to election day, who gets out to vote? It's not the international unions. It's the local unions and the telephone banks and the rallies, etc. So once again, out of California, something may be erupting here that will move across the country. It's also happening in Michigan in terms of locals from 13 unions met considering endorsing me, including three United Auto Worker locals.
Seems to me that's a pretty big if, though. Do you ever feel like you're banging your head against the wall?
For 37 years, what else have I done? I'm the patented underdog. Available for license.
Don't get sued by MasterCard.
No, seriously, the higher the odds, the more determined I am. This is the way I grew up. I'm never fazed by that. I think that I mentioned it earlier, I think if we just had a proportional fair shake by the national media, proportional to our polls, if we were at 7% nationwide, 8% a few weeks ago, now down 5 or 4. But if we had, let's say I am 1/8 in the polls of Al Gore, I'd settle for 1/8 of the coverage. We're not getting 1%. Al Gore the other day, a few weeks ago, went to North Carolina to relax. The Washington Post has a big article. Gore relaxes in North Carolina. I felt like calling up the editor and saying, hey, my home state's Connecticut. If I go back to Connecticut and relax, will you write an article? It's really absurd. I keep asking these editors, I've known them for years, what's your news criteria for covering significant third-party candidates? And they say, we don't have any. Well, that's not good enough, because you're supposed to have news criteria. You have someone with a record of achievement. You have someone who is showing in the polls, 4, 5, 6, 7%, 9% in California, in some polls earlier, 9% in New York. Someone raising issues of acknowledged importance. Acknowledged because I'm using a lot of the reports done by the reporters for Business Week and Wall Street Journal and New York Times and AP. And finally, a campaign that's drawing large crowds, in some ways much larger than Clinton Gore. I mean, Gore and Bush are managing to draw. So, spread the word.
Speaking of third parties, the other big third parties had a bit of an implosion this summer. Thoughts on why that's happened and what the legacy of that is likely to be?
Well, I think the leader of the Reform Party, once he receded, Ross Perot, allowed all the factions to start fighting each other. And there wasn't any money, because he had receded, for them to utilize and be more extroverted instead of introverted. And then the battle started when Buchanan decided to move in and try to wrest the nomination from anyone else. I think the other thing is that it was already split under Perot. You had the American Reform Party spinoff, then you had other factions. They didn't like his control. In New York, for example, they called themselves the Independence Party. And then they don't have a cohesive doctrine in terms of their agenda. It's pretty hard to figure out beyond one or two points, like financing, campaign finance reform, what the party stands for, other than they're sort of disgusted. I must say that all the voters who voted for John McCain, Bill Bradley, Ross Perot, and Jesse Ventura had one common theme between them, and that is they didn't want politics as usual. They didn't want the corruption of money in politics as usual. And I think I'm appealing to those voters because all these other candidates, except for Ventura, who was elected, are no longer on any ballot. Bradley was defeated, and McCain was defeated, Ross Perot was withdrawn. But those are a lot of voters.
So is it your hope, then, that the implosion of the Reform Party is going to be an opportunity for you?
It'll be a modest opportunity, because we've already been called for weeks now, saying that if Buchanan gets the nomination, there's going to be a departure of some of the Reform Party to our candidacy. And I have been invited to go on the, request being listed on the Independence Party in New York, which is basically the former Reform Party.
I'm going to have to interrupt Mr. Nader is going to be conducting some one-on-one interviews with different network press upstairs. We'll conclude here. However, you have plenty of opportunities today. I'll go over the itinerary real quickly. Roughly at about 1:15, if we're there on time, we'll be at the regional campaign headquarters, which is 680 Valencia Street in San Francisco, Valencian 18.